Father in the heavens, we thank you for this place of worship. I thank you for every brother and sister here. Thank you for getting me safely back from my travels. We ask you a special blessing upon the ministry of Elder Randy Foliard, who's visiting a remote congregation today. Please grant that all right words, every good word that he has preached, will sink deep into the souls of them. Father Almighty, I ask that you prosper this message for good. Every right word sink into the hearts of the listeners. Everything that I've said amiss that might be said amiss, cause it to fall to the ground unnoticed. With many thanks for this beautiful Sabbath and for the love of the brotherhood, we pray in Yahshua Messiah always. Amen. Hallelujah. Y'all can be seated. Brothers and sisters, I'm Brother Michael Bannock from Fulton, Missouri. The title of my remarks today is the Fifth Commandment of Ten, continuing our sequential study of the Ten Commandments. Yeah, I know I said I'm from Fulton, Missouri. That might be hard to believe with all the travel I'm doing, huh? I want you guys to know that my heart aches to be here more regularly, but I'm at a point in my life where I got to go where the money is, and there is opportunities to work out of state sometimes. Fifth Commandment of Ten. This is a vast subject, as you know. Already there's a typo. Topics covered. here's some of the things we're going to be talking about today. Certainly, I intend to challenge you today. Yeah. Oh, I put myself in the shoes of almost everybody here. You'll be challenged today in some way. If you've come here expecting a sermon about how children should listen to their parents, and just that, and only that, then you're in error. We'll be covering more than that. I'm going to cover the command itself, the meaning of key words in the command, ways of breaking the commandment, ways of keeping the commandment. We'll have some historical notes from the Bible, strategies for keeping the command, strategies for going forward, and conclusions and summary. For those of you who are seeing the video presentation or the media outreach visually, you know, I might have a mistake in this collection of PowerPoint slides where I failed to erase the timing in there. So I may have to jump around again like I have before. I thought I cleaned them all out, but I have evidence that this thing may have that timing problem. There you go. Exodus 20, verse 12 is the first time we see this command. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which Yahweh thy Elohim giveth thee. And it's repeated again in Deuteronomy 5, 16. The wording's a little different there because they're entering the Holy Land. Honor thy father and thy mother as Yahweh thy Elohim hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged and that it may go well with thee in the land which Yahweh thy Elohim giveth thee. Now, it's commonly and properly interpreted that your days will be prolonged if you obey, if you honor your parents. And if you read this, the Proverbs, what they have to say about honoring your parents, it's evident you should obey the Torah of your mother, the commandments of your father. And it's often stated that it may prolong thy days. But there's another interpretation I'd like you to consider. I'm going to highlight the words in red there. This is called the first commandment with a promise. It says your days may be prolonged. I highlight in red, upon the land which Yahweh the Elohim giveth thee. And then in the Deuteronomy version, with the entry into the Holy Land imminent, it says that thy days may be prolonged and that it may go well with thee in the land which Yahweh the Elohim giveth thee. Now these scriptures, you know, Yahweh's word's rich, and it's been said there's one interpretation but many applications. There's another dimension to this. A nation which has this in play will last a long time in the land in which they're settling. A nation which violates this is headed for destruction. Can you think of a country that has watered this down? I don't have to think too hard to think of a country that has watered this down. As this unfolds, it might be more obvious to you. Any nation that obeys this will be blessed. If they don't, they're just headed for destruction. Okay, because this commandment does not start with the words, thou shalt not, it's considered a positive command, a proactive command to do something. You know, some commandments say, thou shalt not. This one is proactive. Let's take a look at the Hebrew words at play. The key word there is honor. And it's from Strong's, number 3513, Kabod, or Kabed. Now, I highlighted in red the pertinent interpretations, because to be heavy could be both positive or negative. It could be good or bad. I've highlighted in red those interpretations from Strong's, which would help me for this honor your father and mother thing. To be heavy, in a good sense, numerous, rich, honorable, causatively, make weighty. Look at the stuff in red now. Glorify, be made glorious, glory, very great. Skipping down there, honor, promote. I like that one, glory. To glorify your father and mother. You may think that's only for Yahweh. To glorify, isn't that just for Yahweh? Well, when we glorify Yahweh, we're talking about worship. But your reverence for your parents should be something approaching worship. Deep reverence. Heavy reverence, to weigh them heavily. When mom and dad speak, those are the heaviest words you'll ever hear, with one exception. That's Yahweh's word. The only thing that should be weighed more heavily than the word of your parents is Yahweh's word. Let's take a little closer look at that word, kabed or kabod. There's a story in 1 Samuel where the Ark of the Covenant was stolen by the Philistines. The Israelites got goofy. They got cute. They thought that by merely having the Ark of the Covenant in the battlefield, they would win all the time, like a good luck charm. It never crossed their minds that they should be working in faith, faithfulness, and obedience. And the Philistines, in one of those battles, captured the Ark of the Covenant. In this passage here, 1 Samuel 4:21, some lady is having a baby. And in her delivery, she's distressed over the fact that the ark was stolen. And she named the child Ichabod, saying, "The glory is departed from Israel because the ark of Elohim was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." The word kabod there, I've underlined it, kabod, that root means glory. Ichabod means no glory. No, kabod, glory. So I'm trying to relate the word for honoring your parents to the word for kabod, glory. Everybody's heard of the name Ichabod. I don't know why I would name a kid Ichabod. I think anybody done that by accident, you ought to go rethink that. No glory. But now you can relate to it. We should really honor our parents, glorify them, weigh them heavily. Let's understand this. The commandment was given to adults, and it is meant primarily for adults. We love wagging our bony fingers in the face of children, telling them they've got to obey their parents. But the commandment was given to about 2 million people. About half of them were adults. And let's face it, the adults are the only ones who really can understand it, what's really at play. Here are some ways to break the fifth commandment. Cursed be he that setteth light by his father or his mother, and all the people shall say amen. Okay, this is from Deuteronomy 27:16. Now, toward the end of Deuteronomy, Moses lays out for the Israelites a religious ritual they are to perform once they enter the Holy Land. And they're supposed to divide into two halves, one on Mount Gerizim and the other on Mount Ebal. One is to pronounce blessings, the other curses. I've lost track of which is which. But there are portions where the Levites in the Central Valley declare some things. And one of those declarations the Levites are supposed to say is, "Cursed be he that setteth light by his father or mother." And all the people on both mountains will say, "Amen." So be it. Truth. Now, there's a list of these curses that the Levites are supposed to pronounce. This is the second one in the list. The one before it speaks to idolatry. So this is real high up on the list. This is serious business in Yahweh's eyes. Now, in Old English, they translated it to set light by his father or mother. Let's look at the Hebrew word. It's actually the opposite of kabod, glory, honor. It's a primitive word, root, kalah. And you can see the words I've highlighted in red there mean hold in contempt, contemn, despise, lightly esteem, seem vile. So one way to do it is to have the attitude toward your parents of the opposite. One thing that I will be coming up in the course of this presentation is the need to honor your parents even if they are not honorable. Every now and then you'll hear somebody add to the scriptures, try to slip one in on you, and they'll say, oh yeah, I'll honor my father and mother if they're honorable. There's no such contingency in scripture. I'll probably say this a number of times, but if you have parents who are not honorable, and you honor them anyway, you reverence them anyway, you may be the only light they see. We're supposed to represent the kingdom. What, only when it's convenient? Only when everything goes nice? I should have inserted that passage from Psalms. It talks about our pilgrimage to Jerusalem. They pass through the valley of Baca, they turn it into a well of springs. You know, wherever we go, we're supposed to make things better. We have a number of cases, especially in the Messianic era, where people make covenant with Yahweh and the parents don't like it. You still have to honor them. Now, you know what the exceptions are. If your parents tell you to commit sin, you know what the exceptions are. But the main thrust, trunk of the tree thing, is to honor your parents. We'll talk more about that later. Here's some other ways to break the fifth commandment. Exodus 21:15, and he that strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Now that's a capital punishment. I don't have any children or anything like that, never been married. But if I ever did have kids, they would be instructed. If you set a hand on mother, you will inherit the whirlwind of heaven. You know, even if you're not married, ladies, and even if there's no children in the home, women are to bring beauty, order, and love into this world. The mother of the house represents everything that is good in a home. That should be sacred. That's a no-fly zone. If I had kids, it would be made very clear to them, if they dishonor mother, there's no telling what I will do. A good friend of mine had a problem like this in his home. He'd come home at the end of the day, and his wife would pour out her heart and say, the kids were just terrible to me. And this went on for a while, and he said, listen, next time this happens, ring me at work. I'll come here for lunch and surprise everybody. And the kids were terrorizing mom again, and he bust through the door, and he cleaned their clocks. They were real good for a long time. Those of you male head of households, defend your wives, protect your wives. Let those kids know that mom is to be protected. I know this command here from Exodus 21:15 speaks to striking father or mother, but I think we ought to reach back and find those instincts that tell us to protect the lady of the home. You'll notice here in Exodus 21:15, there's no analysis of the Hebrew. I don't think we need to go into the Hebrew of this verse. It's kind of obvious what this means. Here's another way to break the fifth commandment, and that is to curse your father or mother. And it's very similar to the other word that we looked at a bit ago. He that curses his father or mother shall surely be put to death. Look at the word there, it's kalal. It means to make light, bring into contempt, curse, despise. Sorry about that. To set at light, afflict, vile. This is speaking to attitude. This and the commandment that is similar to it speaks to attitude. When we hear the word curse, we think in terms of profanity or speaking evil to your parents. But this really gets down to the attitudes. Those of you who are new to our outreach may notice that we spend a lot of time thinking about the Hebrew roots of the faith. This is one of these cases where going back to the Hebrew roots of the faith deepens and enriches our understanding. It's not enough to say, don't curse with your mouth. You go back to the Hebrew roots of the word and you find out it's an attitude issue. And you've got to find a way to honor your parents, even if they let you down. Here's another way to break the fifth commandment. That's neglecting the needs of your parents. It's kind of tricky to cover some of these subjects because sometimes they overlap with cultural things that we take for granted. We'll try to explain this bit about hand washing because this is the context in which Yahshua makes it clear that we cannot neglect the needs of our parents. The Jews got very caught up in cleanliness back then, in Yahshua's time. They required people to wash their hands before they eat. And this was not simply it was a ritualistic thing. It was not merely cleaning up. Now, there was a Messianic Jewish brother I was visiting one day, and before they ate, he was urging me to wash my hands with the family. But he set it up like a ritual thing. And I had to turn him down. I have no problem washing my hands if they're soiled, but this was a ritualistic thing. And he knew why I turned it down. Yahshua's disciples don't do that. And I felt like I'd be just denying the Messiah. Now, those with a Jewish background may, you know, have a hard time rejecting this, but Yahshua is speaking to that ritual here. What's at play here is very simple. Let me try to sort this out, because Yahshua is speaking against the Jewish command to wash hands before you eat. And yet we tell the kids to wash their hands before they eat, don't we? You know, what's going on here? It's really kind of simple. Number one, I wash my hands after I soil them. It isn't like I soil my hands, and then I go through life thinking like everything's fine without washing them. If you do a dirty job, maybe working under the car, cleaning out the vents, face full of soot, you wash your hands after you do that stuff. You don't go through the day continuing to touch other things with your hands soiled. You wash your hands after you soil them. Okay, now, normally before we have fellowship meal, I don't wash my hands. Unless I've blown my nose, you know, or something like that. Or coughed, yes. And if you think I've forgotten to wash my hands when I should, go tell me. I'm open to you guys telling me that. Brother Mike, you've been coughing a lot. Go wash your hands. That won't bother me. Why do we tell children to wash their hands before they eat? Because kids are constantly soiling their hands. That's why. Children are constantly making a mess. So we tell them to wash their hands before they eat. But that's not what Yahshua is speaking against here. Howbeit in vain, Yahshua says, Mark 7, verse 7 to 13, Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of Elohim, you hold the tradition of men, as the washing of pots and cups, and many other such like things you do. And he said unto them, Full well you reject the commandment of Elohim, that you may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, Honor your father and your mother, and whoso curses his father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is korban, that is to say a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, he shall be free. And you suffer him no more to do aught for his father or mother. Now, let me explain what he's talking about. These Jews manufactured a tradition that if your parents had needs, instead of helping them, you gave it to the temple, to the ministry there, you call it korban, a word that means gift. And then you're off the hook. You don't have to help your parents. It's a way of buying your way out of helping your parents. I clarified the word ought, O-U-G-H-T. That particular spelling means duty, like you ought to do something. Making the word of Elohim none effect through your tradition, which you have delivered, and many such like things you do. I should have underlined the word many. Here Yahshua is making clear our moral obligation to help our parents in need. I sometimes wonder about these widows in distress the Bible talks about. How did that happen? Don't they have kids? Isn't there some family there to help out? The family is Yahweh's primary conduit of help. I see these homeless people on the street sometimes. I wonder, who are they, you know, are they at peace with their families? Have they tried asking their uncle or aunt or their mom? On the other hand, they might be old enough to have children. Do they have kids who won't help them? What's going on there? Look, I don't have all the answers in all these cases, but one thing's for sure. One way to break the fifth commandment is to neglect your parents. It's going to get worse. It's going to get more challenging as we drill down through this. But neglecting your parents is a horrible thing in heaven. There's a famous Bible apologist. Let's see. First, let's explain the word apologist. When someone's an apologist for the Bible or Christianity or the faith, it has nothing to do with saying they're sorry. It's apologia, apologia, word away from, word away from. Like, if you challenge my faith, I will have a word coming from me, away from me to you. Apologia, apology. It has nothing to do with saying you're sorry in this case. Biblical apologists defend the scriptures. They're challenged and they have a word coming back. The most popular one today is Ravi Zacharias. Now, he's not the most scholarly. He's very scholarly, but he's not the most scholarly. He's also the most popular and also very effective. In one of his speeches, he said that he's from India originally, but he was not raised Hindu. He was raised Christian. But he did manage to study all the religions in the world. And you know, there's one commandment that all religions in the world have in common. And that's a commandment to honor your parents. It's as though the Almighty has set up a hedge and said to the devil, thus far and no farther. This command is going to stand everywhere. Every culture in the world has a wedding ritual or a marriage ritual or something like that. But in terms of commands, they all have a commandment to honor your father and mother. No question the Almighty is telling us something here. Here are ways to guard or keep this commandment. Obey your parents. Speak well of them. Those of you who know me well know that I will not say anything against my parents, nor against Adam and Eve. Sometimes in sermons it's fun to poke fun at Adam and Eve and joke about what happened there. But they're our parents too, and we should speak well of them. Honor their memory in conversation. Talk to our parents. Engage them. Gather wisdom stories from their past. I perceived that my mother was slipping in terms of her mental capacity. And so, while she still had her wits about her, I got some recording equipment and interviewed her. Nice long interview about the past. Got her to talk about it. Now, it turns out she said some things that would embarrass me if you were to hear it. And I had to edit those things out. But talking about raising us children, you know, some things we got to protect. But gather wisdom stories from them. Some of you, maybe in the sound of my voice, have the ability to do this now. Go grab a tape recorder or some other thing and get them on a chair and have them talk. It took me a long time to get my dad to talk. Learn from your parents. Demand that they let you learn from them. My parents were at first hostile to the faith. And I would squeeze them for every drop of wisdom I could get. Boy, did I learn a lot from them. Learn a lot about human nature, a lot about history. I learned a lot about them. I wish I had not thrown out or lost. No, I think what happened is it just wound up in Dad's stuff and it got lost. But one Sunday he opened up and told me all the places in Europe that he was as a soldier in World War II. Oh, I wish I had saved that. We had a map from National Geographic open. Oh. But I let them know. Come on, I want to learn from you. Then do things for them. My kid sisters, my youngest sisters, had a different dad than me. And he was kind of delinquent. But one of my kid sisters developed a relationship with my dad. And even so, my parents were divorced, so this girl who's from a different man, she developed a relationship with my dad and would come over to the apartment and clean, hang curtains, made him feel special. A really wonderful relationship. We have something similar in the scriptures. We have Ruth and Naomi. Ruth had nothing. She deemed Naomi to be her mother. And she honored her by following her advice on how to get married. Do things with your parents. Incorporate them into your plans. And then finally, this is the sweet spot, make demands of them. As a business associate, a customer out in California was interrupted when I was out there in a business meeting, got a call on the cell phone from his daughter. And as he folded up the flip phone, he said, "What does my daughter think I am, just an ATM cash machine?" And of course, his daughter was asking for money for something, wasn't she? Maybe in that guy's case, she was going too far, because it seems she called him a lot. But you will find in practice that your parents are anxious to do things for you. You will find that your parents are the best friends you have on earth. They have your welfare in mind in ways that you don't know. Their hearts rise and fall. I see this with my friends now. Their hearts rise and fall with their welfare of their kids. It's just amazing how this stuff goes generation to generation. If your parents can be there for you in some substantive way, let them know. I'm going to talk about a forgotten dimension of honoring your parents, and that is to be successful in righteousness. Proverbs 10:1 says, "A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother." You know, that verse is repeated so many different ways in the book of Proverbs. Well, here's some ways to honor your parents. This is for people of all ages. Stay out of trouble. You really make your parents happy by staying out of trouble. Make wise choices. You know, use your head. Don't be a fool. Put their mind at ease. You know, you could place phone calls to them, send them a letter, a long letter. You know, when people passing emails around like they're frisbees in a schoolyard, what really stands out today is a handwritten letter. That stuff really stands out. Avoid risks. You know, I thought that taking risks was the American way. I'm a businessman. I should take risks. I found out the hard way that if you are going to do business, you should not do it in a way that causes you to borrow or to partner with someone who is not saved. This was one of the temptations put upon Yahshua, to tempt Yahweh. "Oh, Yahweh will get me out of this." Avoid risks. You drive your parents crazy when you take unnecessary risks. This is going to get very hard for some of you. Apply the counsel of your parents and report back as to how that has helped you. "Dad, I followed your advice and it worked out." You know, let them know. I'm getting back to that theme in the Hebrew roots of the commandment. Weigh them heavily. Glorify them. Honor them. Celebrate them. I know there's some hard cases out there. We're going to try to address that before we wrap up. But this is an area where you can get really creative. The patriarchs were subject to their parents. Now, as we're drilling through the book of Genesis in our Torah readings week by week, notice how they obey their parents. In Genesis 28, verse 1 to 2, here's an example. It says, "And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, 'You shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, my mother's father, and take thee a wife thence from the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother.'" You know, friends, there's one area of life I consistently find young people will not submit to the commandment, and that is to let the parents tell them that they have the go-ahead for a marriage. They want the blessing. It's like in that movie, Fiddler on the Roof. "We want your blessing, but not your permission." want you to think about this. He's not arranging a marriage. He's saying, go find a wife over there. He's not telling him who to marry. He just said, go find a wife over there in the house of Laban. This is the hardest area for people to let go of. I could talk up here for hours, painful hours of the stories I've accumulated, of young people throwing themselves into the arms of a courtship or a betrothal or a marriage, and they don't give a rip what the parents say. And then it blows up in their faces, and they wonder, what went wrong? Or they do a blame storming. Instead of brainstorming, they're blame storming. Let's get something straight. The scriptures do not support arranged marriages. Can we get this off the table? This is a common assumption that people get arranged marriages. The Bible, the closest we have to an arranged marriage is Isaac and Rebekah. And if you read the story like you're supposed to, you find that she had the right to say no. It's not an arranged marriage. This business of two people being forced together, you must marry each other, it's foreign to the spirit of truth. There's still some nations on this earth that practice arranged marriages. There's some foolish air pockets in the world. There's some bizarre practices in some sectors of the Muslim community where they're marrying little girls and crazy things like that. Okay, I'm not talking about that. But like in India, yeah, the parents suggest mates to the kids, and the kids usually hit it off. But the kids have the right of refusal. In Kenya, I know that there's some parts of Kenya where the parents will recommend a mate to each other. Kids have the right to say no. Usually they hit it off, though. There was a young man I really was fond of. His parents did not want him to get married. I said, you really shouldn't ought to do this. But suppose I'm wrong, I said there. Just suppose my doctrine's wrong. Don't you think you should at least go back to the guy and ask your dad why he doesn't think you should get married? Often it's a matter of timing. It's a matter of preparation. The proverb says, get your field ready before you build your house. Make sure that you're financially stable. Maybe there could be some good reason. Nah, I don't have to listen to him. He ain't going to tell me who to love. The piles of stories that I've got collected now over the time, people close to me, not so close to me, stories I've heard from other preachers, it's a wasteland. A famous preacher once gathered up the results of a survey of how people determine Yahweh's will. And it's amazing all the answers they got. Casting fleeces, pray about it, how do I feel, open doors. Let me tell you right now, open doors. Open doors, you may take that as a sign from heaven, but if those open doors require a sin or a compromise to go through, it's not an open door from heaven, it's a test. We cast fleeces, we ask for signs. The scriptures, Yahshua said, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks a sign. Romans 12 tells us to renew by the transforming of our minds that we may discern Yahweh's will. But almost nobody says, I sought the counsel of my parents. Nobody ever says that. And it could be little things, it could be big things. Here your parents have been downloaded from heaven supernatural wisdom for you. Supernatural insights. And I look back at how right my mom and dad were about some of the heavy things I came to them with. Having only scraps and morsels of information, they were able to see clearly what was going on, and I could not. But I'm the bad guy. I've collected all these stories of people who've disrespected their parents, but I'm the bad guy for saying, hey, you've got to make sure the parents are on board. One good friend of mine lives very far from here, very far from here. He courted and married a girl without the parents' permission. They didn't even show up at the wedding. Within 2 weeks, they had an argument. She ran home to the parents, and the marriage broke up. You want the parents in your corner. I'm going to show you another verse from Genesis 26, two chapters before this one from I just showed you from Genesis 28. Genesis 26, 34 to 35. And Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemat, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. Note this, which were a grief of mine unto Isaac and Rebekah. Different culture, different religion, drove them nuts. Another example of Esau forsaking the blessing. He had a terrific conversation before services with Sister Nancy about those who are willing to fight for the blessing. And even though Jacob was a stinker, he wanted that blessing so bad he would do anything to get that blessing. To get the blessing from Yahweh and to get the blessing from his father. But Esau pretty much ripped and ran and did whatever he felt like doing. And these girls he married were a grief of mine to Isaac and Rebekah. That explains what happens two chapters later in Genesis 28, where Jacob says Isaac says to Jacob, remember, this is not his favorite son. He says, listen, go back to our homeland and marry within the clan. Do that. Didn't tell him who to marry, just gave him direction. We could not have a disruption in the child of promise. Let me make clear, there's no arranged marriages in the Bible, and anybody who tries to pull that stunt, you're not going to get any support from me. But the Bible does allow us to recommend to the kids, hey, we think this would be a good match for you. And let's face it, most kids hit it off on their own anyway, don't they? But you better seek the counsel of your parents, because if you don't, you're going to regret it later. Let me give you an example of some people who guarded and kept the commandment through the story of the Rechabite vow. Jonadab, the patriarch, this is in the book of Jeremiah, he made a vow upon all his offspring. No wine or strong drink, no permanent housing. They had to live in tents and raise animals. And it seems very unfair. These are choices denied to them. The scriptures allow us to have property, to have wine or strong drink at certain occasions. But Jonadab, he was the son of Rechab, he made a vow and he made it incumbent upon his offspring. No wine or strong drinks, no permanent housing. It's very unfair. But that was his command. Jeremiah, we call him known as Jeremiah, he was told by Yahweh to give them wine anyway. He set them down in a big tent, poured bowls of wine, huge bowls of wine, and said, go ahead, drink. And they refused, based on the command of their patriarch, Jonadab. Just a quote here from Jeremiah 35:8. Thus we have obeyed, emphasis, obeyed, the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, and all that he hath charged us, to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters. Yahweh told Jeremiah to tempt them with bowls of wine. He said, we can't do this. Our father told us not to do it. These are grown men. Then Yahweh speaks. Now remember, in Jeremiah's time, the Babylonians are pounding on the door, ready to invade and just slaughter everybody. Jeremiah is begging them to repent. I forget whether this happened before the scales were tipped, because there came a point where the people wouldn't listen, and Yahweh says, okay, you're going to be invaded. There's no more hope. Yahweh then used this dramatic scene to explain something to all of Judah. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, Elohim of hosts. It's in Jeremiah 35:17. The Elohim of Israel, behold, I will bring upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem all the evil that I have pronounced against them, because I have spoken to them, but they have not heard, and I have called unto them, but they have not answered. In this context, Yahweh had explained in the same chapter, the Rechabites are obeying their father, why don't you guys obey me? I'm your father. Jeremiah said unto the house of the Rechabites, Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, because you have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab your father, and kept all his precepts, and done according unto all that he hath commanded you. Therefore thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, Jonadab, the son of Rechab, will not want a man to stand before me forever. You know, sometimes you hear these little debates about what should go in the cup at Passover. Should it be wine? Should it be grape juice? One reason we know for sure grape juice is acceptable is because we may have Rechabites right here. Yahweh says the Rechabites will always have a man to stand before him. One of you guys might be Rechabite. They could only have grape juice. They couldn't take wine. This is such a profound prophecy. Here you have grown men obeying a command of their father, a command that's very unfair, denies them their rights, denies them for their privileges. And Yahweh uses this as an example to us. Here's another example of someone who guarded and kept this command when Yahshua of Nazareth was left behind after the feast. When they saw him in Luke chapter 2, verse 48, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. Now let's understand this word sought. In other words, they had to look all over for him. And he said unto them, how is it that you sought me? Know ye not that I must be about my father's business? Now he really thought he was doing the right thing, this young man. He really thought this is what he's supposed to be doing. What surprised him is that they didn't know to look first in the temple. That's what surprised him. And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And note this, he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. So it says he was subject to his parents. I wonder if this was hard for him, because he would know more as he grew. He would know more spiritually than they know. I'm going to address this in a moment. And Yahshua increased in wisdom and stature and favor. It's the same word as the word for grace with Yahweh and man. And the word for grace there, favor, is the same as the Greek word for grace, but you only get grace by humility. Very few people will connect this verse with the previous one. The reason he was growing in grace is because he had the humility to be subjected to his parents. Let's go deeper. Ways to break the fifth commandment. Most ways of breaking this commandment have to do with adults dishonoring their parents. That's where the rubber meets the road. It's obvious that children are supposed to honor their parents. It's obvious. Little kids, of course, they're supposed to obey their parents. But this commandment was given to adults and is meant for adults primarily. By the way, it's also targeted for young people who think they are all grown up or at the threshold of adulthood. If you're smart enough to think about this commandment and think about the things I'm telling you, then yep, this commandment is for you. I have to take a drink here. Hold on, please. The most primitive way to break this command is to assume you know more than your parents know. I understand the word more as in know more. Well, I know more than they know, so I'm qualified to overrule them. Or maybe you know better, like you have more quality information. The information you have is better quality. It comes from better sources. Or you think you know better. In your heart, in your mind, in the self-referential caverns of your soul, you think you know better than your parents. Well, that's how it always is. It's one of the common cliches of being a teenager is to look back at your parents and say, Mom, Dad, you don't understand. Or maybe you think you can outsmart them. Somewhere in the dark pockets of your soul, you might think, if I can outsmart my parents, that's good enough. They'll never know. I believe so many of our problems go back to the Garden of Eden experience. Our first parents were Yahweh, then Adam, and then Eve. But Adam and Eve thought they could somehow know better have more knowledge. They think they thought they were on some shortcut path to divinity. And so no matter the fact that they were coached by Yahweh, don't eat that fruit, they let a serpent suggest to them that they had a better angle. Another tragic case, I know a young man. He was just emphatic. I talked to him a number of times. He was emphatic. It was the will of the Almighty to marry this particular lady. And his dad was saying, no, her and her family have tremendous problems. And this young man just insisted the Almighty told him to marry her. By the way, you people come to me with this kind of talk, oh, I know it's his will, I got to marry this person. I can't see the Almighty forcing people, saying, you got to go into covenant with this person. I think he brings people together, but I believe he also gives us the choice of what to do about it. This young man was claiming the Supreme Being had bypassed his parents and told him to marry this lady. That whole situation blew up in about 3 weeks. A total catastrophe. And I remember how emphatic he was before that. I thought the Almighty told me. The parents begged him, don't do it, don't do it. We think we know better. When we see the scriptural passages about delusion, be careful, be circumspect, be wise, are you thinking it's the other guy over yonder? I would that I could impart to you the time-saving information I have for reverencing and treasuring what your parents have for you. I wish I could save you all out of time by letting you know all that. But it has certainly saved me a lot of time and a lot of grief. Not using your parents to discern Yah's will is a big mistake. All this happy talk about fleeces, signs, open doors, things like that. And here your parents are standing there. Your parents typically have a nuclear arsenal of wisdom for you if you would tap into it, even if they're unsaved, even if they got lots of faults. They can see things and know things that you can't. Now this is going to get really intense now. We're going to talk about some very serious stuff. Jose, I told you earlier that a slide's coming up. Okay. In Proverbs 30, verse 17, there's a very graphic statement. The eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagle shall eat it. This is a very graphic scene. Now, if you lived in the country of ancient Israel, you would see this often. Here's how this works. There's a dead carcass animal on the ground, and the vultures flying overhead wonder, is that a meal or not? They don't want to eat it unless it's dead. And the eye of the dead animal is open. You ever see animals with their eye open? So the raven will fly down, land near the head, and peck at the eye. And if the carcass doesn't twitch, they know the animal's dead. And it's kind of gruesome. Why would Yahweh put this in the Bible unless he wants us to learn from it? I happened to find a video on YouTube. Thank Brother Randy for helping me capture that. I don't know, they may hate both of us after they see this. But this is what it looks like when a vulture eats the eye of a dead animal. This is a dead zebra. Can you move the mouse around on the bottom there? There it is. We're not going to play the whole thing. That's a little, just go ahead, click on that, brother. Oh, well, okay, have a mistake on me. This particular computer there doesn't have QuickTime installed. I'll ask the IT experts to take care of that at a later time. We need QuickTime installed for this video to play. But I'll tell you what, I'm just going to draw your attention to the vulture in the back. He is plucking and eating the eye of that dead zebra. Now, this was a common thing to see out in the country. Yahweh uses that. I mean, that vulture is going in there real deep in the eye socket. There must be something really yummy in there. Why does Yahweh use that? to convey to us this curse, the eye that mocketh at his father and despises to obey his mother. The ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it. Why does he use that? This is going to get into some heavy stuff. There's nothing here that will embarrass you or offend you, but these are harsh realities. Some of the brethren here, before getting saved, have spent a good deal of time in the world, in the street. They understand city life, or they understand gangs, or they understand that rough part of our modern society. Here's what happens is when a child and the parents grow distance between them, there's a certain kind of dead sadness in the eyes that develops. It's more pronounced in girls than boys, but there's a certain kind of darkness in their eyes, pain, when children are separated from their parents. And if it's a girl, men of low character say, this is my chance to take advantage of her. I see this played out enough times, I can tell you it's very chilling in its predictability. When children are at odds with their parents, look at the bottom here, that faraway look in their eyes is a tip-off to people of low character that they can be taken advantage of, swindled, seduced, and led astray. It happens somewhat in men. It's not as the visual prominence is not it's not as strong in guys. But boys with that dead eye look, that faraway dead look, they get lured into gangs and crime and things like that. They're more vulnerable. And that's why often you'll see people who are familiar with the scriptures, they'll refer to parents as an umbrella of protection. How can we make it so the kids will find it attractive to heed the counsel of their parents? Because when there's distance there, there's lack of protection. Girls, girls and boys both, if you have a friend of the same gender or the opposite gender, if you would like to have an idea of what their influence will be on you, try to find out how they feel about their parents. You know, if they're always whining about their parents, there's trouble there. There's danger there. Maybe you can be a source to encourage them to make peace with their parents, huh? Maybe you can be a light to them. But typically, if kids are at odds with their parents, trouble is in the offing of one kind or another. That's that dead-eyed look that Proverbs 30 is talking about. So let's talk about rebuilding relationships a bit. Notice I haven't talked a whole lot about little children. I've talked about teenagers and I've talked about adults. Honoring parents requires sacrifice. In obeying this command, you will sometimes lose things. You'll lose freedoms. Freedom. You have the freedom to go do something, but only the word of the parents keeps you from doing it. I've experienced that. Doing the right thing is going to cost you something. Certain advantages. You might miss opportunities for personal expression, comfort, maybe even success. That's what happened to the Rechabites. I don't like using myself as an example, but I remember I had a great career going with Bell Labs in Pennsylvania. I was part of the Friestown Assembly. My dad was getting old, and my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I said, we got to get her back to familiar surroundings so she can spend her declining years in some comfort. But sometimes you're going to miss out on things to do the right thing towards your parents. Rights as opposed to freedoms. Now, rights normally have no negative consequences. It's amazing how people will play with words if you're not careful. Do you have the right to sin? Of course not. Nobody has the right to sin. But we do have free will, and thus we have the freedom to sin, don't we? See, freedoms come with the potential for failure, and that's how I distinguish between freedoms and rights. I have a right to own a gun, and if I had a gun, which I don't, but if I had a gun, it would be my right. There's nothing immoral about having that. But sometimes you have to give up your rights, your freedoms, your advantages. You have to give up your time if you're going to honor your parents. I'm talking about glorify your parents, as that Hebrew word conveys to us, to weigh them heavily. Investing treasures such as time into the lives of your parents will leave less time for goofing off. And money, yes, doing the right thing by your parents will cost money. There was a time when it would be your phone bill, but maybe it's something else now. But honoring parents requires sacrifice. That's rebuilding a relationship where you have the ability to reach back to the previous generation and do that. I've done this. Other people have. It's a very rewarding thing. Now, Yahshua and the apostles set the pace. I guess I should put the ministry on notice that I'm going to be talking about this Bible principle every time I'm behind a microphone, and that is the principle of forsaking all. In Luke 14:33, Yahshua says, "So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath cannot be my disciple." I see now the long-term consequences of not living a kingdom-oriented, sacrificial-minded life. You might have to give up a lot to obey each of the commandments. Today I'm talking about the fifth of ten. But you may have to give up a lot. Yahshua wants everything. What soldiers we could be for the kingdom. One thing I like about YRM is that there's continuity amongst the families in the ministry. There's continuity there. There's honor there. 1 Peter 3, verse 12 to 14. "For the eyes of Yahweh are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of Yahweh is against them that do evil. And who is he that will harm you if you be followers of that which is good? But, and if you suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye. And be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled." Who really is willing to suffer for righteousness' sake? To defer gratification? To put off what you want to do, what I want to do? Who's willing to do that for righteousness' sake? The kingdom is the only thing worth living for, if you ask me. Yahshua and the apostles have set it straight. Suffering for righteousness' sake is part of this. And there are times, if you rebuild with your parents, there are times when you're going to be making sacrifices. I can't speak to every case out there. But if your starting point is, what's the kingdom ideal? What's the closest I can get to that? You'll come up with the right answer. What can parents do to elicit obedience responses from their children? I've talked about things that we as adults can do to pull our parents into our lives, rebuild with them. But how about making sure the future is secure? Here are some of the things that lead to that dead-eye situation. Broken promises. In Proverbs 13:12, it says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it is a tree of life." Here's the remedy for that. Remember, the problem is when children are disengaged from the hearts of their parents, it leaves them vulnerable to sin. Keep your promises, parents. It's a tree of life. In the face of unexpected hardships, where you have to cancel plans, show humility and beg your children for forgiveness. Proverbs 6, verse 3 to 4 says, "Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids." If you have to break a promise to your kids, you ought to do this thing in Proverbs 6, 3 to 4. By the way, one or two verses later, it says, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard." We should not be lazy in making shalom with our children. Now, the last line in this slide, I think, is the most important line in the entire presentation, believe it or not. Outside of Scripture, children must forgive their parents when they fail. All you little children, at your times when your mom or dad hurt your feelings, huh? You got to forgive them. Yeah, you got to forgive them. Some of you grown-ups are dealing with scars that your parents had caused. Some of them may be big scars. Some of them may fall into areas of criminal activity. Yahweh has made provision for magistrates, police, and such, and courts, to put fear in the hearts of such evildoers. But if you've grown up with deep scars from your parents, you have to forgive them. The greater the injustice, the good news is the greater the injustice, the greater the potential for messianic glory in your life. Because Yahshua didn't deserve anything of that bad stuff that happened to him. He always given you the grace to forgive your parents. You've got to do it. Are we going to rebuild the kingdom here in this household of faith that we have? This business of breaking promises, Christian counselors will tell you, it is one of the key breakpoints in rebuilding the lives of broken children and broken homes. Yeah, I told you you'd be challenged today. There's lots to work on here, isn't there? Here's another area, that's the thing we want to quit, want to stop. One of the causes is sin in the home. In Psalm 125:3, it says, "For the rod of the wicked shall not rest upon the lot of the righteous, lest the righteous put forth their hands into iniquity." When you let something evil into your home, you're letting the scepter, the rod of wickedness, have rulership there. And so it momentarily takes over. Why would you want an R-rated movie or an X-rated movie in your home? I mean, if there's something in there you really got to share with people, oh, come look at this. Come look at scene 3 in this movie with me. Maybe you could rent it from Family Video or something. But what are you letting into your home? What polluting things are in your home? The kids pick this up. What's the remedy? Repent. Clean it up. Rid the home of things polluted. Behave properly towards each other. If there's sin in the home, it's going to be really hard to garner the respect of your children. Here's another dead-eye cause, speaking evil of dignities. This one is real hard these days. The governments have really let us down. How can we speak against the unwise actions of our government without speaking evil of dignities? The politicians have let us down so much. If the children see you disrespecting authority, this is common sense. How can you claim any authority? If you're speaking ill of your parents, how can they respect you? Remedy, obey the law. Pray for leadership, all areas of leadership in our lives. Get on friendly terms with the local authorities. Get on friendly terms with the police, the local representatives and such. You will find that they will protect you in hard times and involve the children in these things. This is the last of the dead-eye preventative things, and that is evil speaking of each other. Common sense. If the children see you disrespecting each other, parents, how can you claim any authority? Respect each other as co-heirs of salvation. Respect each other's divinely ordained roles. Plant words of respect in the children's hearts. And openly praise the good qualities of your spouse. Hint, that means that you have to develop those qualities. I mean, if I want my wife to tell the kids about my good qualities, I better have some good qualities to talk about. You know? There's always something to celebrate. Dad works hard. Mom loves you a lot. You know, there's things you can talk up. But, I mean, having the children in the house, I've observed that it often puts the spurs in parents to be better people. Finally, in the face of trial, coach the children on how to bear up. Sometimes the parents will let us down. And one of the parents is going to have to play a coach and say, look, Dad didn't mean to hurt your feelings, but he's trying to fix something or take care of something a certain way. Sometimes one parent has to intervene to make peace for the others and coach the children into a position of respect. We're almost done. Summary, the commandment emphasizes weightiness. I should have put the word glory in there. Weightiness. Our parents are the closest thing we have to heaven here on earth. There are many ways to dishonor our parents. I want you to be honest with yourself, with your language, your behavior. There are many ways to honor our parents. We can get creative and have a lot of fun there. I did. I had a blast laying siege to the hearts of my parents. Before my mother succumbed to Alzheimer's, where she still had her wits about her, she wanted to be in my religion. Prior to that, she was hostile to it. What miracle might you effect? Now, the commandment was given to adults and meant primarily for adults. Children must obviously be in subjection, as Yahshua was. Yahshua and the patriarchs were subject to their parents, even with examples of grown-ups obeying their parents. Protecting children from bad parenting will enable them to better see your wisdom and applying it. We should do everything we can to heal up those bonds between parents and children. Homes with children must apply a long-term program of self-discipline to get the best response from their children. Finally, rebuilding adult relationships, even with unsaved parents, is a gift from heaven. You may be the only light they will ever see. Thank you for your attention. You're very patient and attentive through all this. Praise Yahweh always. Thanks so much. Hallelujah.